Cecilia was leaning over her desk, scowling into a view screen.
What is it? Another little problem? Oh, bad hawks.
Where?
This excuse for a hunter stallion. Look at it.
Harris came around to the end of the desk and looked at the shiny black horse on the view screen. It trotted back and forth, looking sound enough to her. Cecilia froze the picture and pointed.
Here, this is the problem. Those hawks should be much bigger.
No use trying to get Cecilia's mind shifted to the crew until she'd worked her way through the horse business.
It's the feet that always look too small to me. Why are the hawks too small?
The answer took longer than Harris had expected, because Cecilia insisted on bringing up video files on a dozen or so horses, as well as an animated skeletal model.
Yeah, I see. Just like the ankles, as you said. Ankles sprain more often than knees or hips.
You are ridiculous. It's the same joint, but it's not the same stresses. Oh, I give up. What was it you came about?
Arash Lavati, who saved our skins, as you recall, has asked me a favor. He wants me to transport one of his crew who needs to be, out of touch for a while.
Why?
He didn't say exactly. It has something to do with the mess we were all in, and something the person overheard. He's a communications tech.
Is this a way of sneaking in another ex-military crew member?
No.
I don't like it.
Arash's medical teams saved Sirkin's life, and yours. We owe him, both of us. He got us back here, past potential enemies, in time for the Grand Council.
Cecilia's expression didn't soften.
You don't have to consider this person a crew member if you wish. Since it's technically my ship, consider him my guest.
You... You stinker. I almost wish I'd known you when you were all military. You must have been...
Difficult. Difficult is what they called it.
Brilliant on occasion, I've no doubt. If you were my age, I'd thrash you. But considering... I'll just put some interesting problems in your next riding lesson.
You can't mean that. You think I'm going on with riding?
It would exercise something besides your ingenuity. And you never know when physical fitness will come in handy. You and Petrus, for instance.
We have other ways of maintaining physical fitness.
I'll bet you have.
Other than that, I don't know why I thought you'd mellow after rejuvenation.
I don't either, and I didn't. Mellow was never my virtue. But we've had even honors on this one. I won't say any more about that man's crewman, whatever he is.
Thank you. May I ask why you were looking at that stallion whose hawks you didn't like?
Rotterdam. Those people did a lot for me. They're old friends, of course, but I want to do something for them. Of course, I can share the bloodstock I have there, but I've been doing that for years. What I'm looking for is some outcross lines that will broaden their base, that they couldn't possibly afford on their own.
Is that all the planet does? Raise horses?
Cecilia touched her screen and brought up a graphic montage.
Almost. It's a combination of climate, terrain, and the accidents of discovery and development. Horses are useful in a variety of ways, in colonization, self-replicating farm power, pack animals, in difficult terrain, personal transportation. But they're displaced if industrialization provides alternatives. So usually you have poor planets with horses, workhorses, and room to breed, but no recreational bloodstock. Then you have industrial planets with a demand for recreational horses, but those horses squeezed into less and less land. Rotterdam was settled as an agricultural world, complete with draft horses, but its climate is far better suited to permanent pasturage than grain farming. Someone apparently obtained some bloodstock semen and began breeding recreational horses.
How did they market them?
With great difficulty. But somehow they got a colt nominated for a famous stakes race, and got him there alive and capable of running. More than capable. That was Buccinator. It was one of his descendants that I rode at Bunny's. I bought into his syndicate as a young woman.
So you're going to find additional seamen or whatever for your friends on Rotterdam?
Right. I've got a dozen cubes to review. Ordered them from bloodstock agents, and then we'll go take a look. So far, most of Rotterdam's produce is seamen and embryos. It's too far off the main shipways, and very rarely can a group get together to haul mature animals someplace. When I first set up my stud there, I'd planned to work on that, but things changed. Anyway, if they have the quality, the money will follow, and provide transport.
Have you decided where to go first?
We're in horse trials. I've missed two of them. No reason to miss this time. I should pick up more ideas there. Breeders, not yet with bloodstock agents, that sort of thing.
I'd like to leave as soon as Kutsudis is aboard. He's not the only problem. I know you talked to your nephew, and you know that Lord Thornbuckle has asked me to take on Brune.
I'm willing. The lawyers can handle my suit just as well without me. Better, perhaps. They say I interfere. I didn't know it would affect Ronnie and Raffaella.
Harris thought of saying what she thought about the lawsuit, but considering her own family relations, she decided against it. She was hardly one to preach reconciliation with relatives. Brigdis Serkin hated being back on Rockhouse Major. Over on Minor, she had been able to pretend that they weren't in the same system where Amelie died. Here, every shop window, every bar, every slideway and bounce tube reminded her of Amelie. Here, she had died, and into this station's recycler, her physical cells had gone to become the elements of something else, even this meal. She shoved it away, disgusted suddenly by the rich aroma of stew and bread. Mahari leaned across the crowded table.
What's wrong, hon? Got a bug or something?
Serkin didn't want to answer. Mahari and the others had been so careful of her since the shooting, so sorry they'd believed a former shipmate and condemned her. They had organized that revenge on Amelie's counselor in hopes of cheering her up. They had enjoyed it a lot more than she did. She was tired of it, tired of having to be kind in return. What she really wanted, she thought, was to be somewhere else, with someone else, someone who wasn't part of the original mess. A face flickered in her memory a moment. The rich girl who had been Lady Cecilia's friend and pretended to be hers as well. She scolded herself into a deeper depression. Probably she wouldn't see Brun again. It was silly to keep looking at the presents Brun had bought as part of their pretense of courtship.
Hi there.
Serkin looked up, startled. Mahari scowled. Brun in the flesh, clearly excited and happy, in a soft blue silk jumpsuit that must have cost a fortune and brought out the blue of her eyes. Brun squeezed in next to Serkin with a chair she snagged from the next table.
We have to talk.
Serkin felt her face going hot. There was no need for this. That other game was long over.
And how did you find our humble eatery?
I asked where the Sweet Delight's crew usually ate. Since now I'm in the crew...
You're not. I wonder what the captain's thinking of.
Brun reached for a hunk of bread.
My father? He thinks I need seasoning before I'm turned loose on an unsuspecting universe. And he thinks Captain Serrano is the right person to provide it. And you, of course.
She grinned around the table. The others all stared at Brun, and Serkin hoped no one would notice how fast her own pulse was beating. She didn't know yet if she was happy about this or not, but she couldn't be indifferent.
I hope you're ready to go aboard and start working. Captain's told us to be ready to ship out at a half-shift notice.
Fine with me. I've already put my stuff aboard.
It's called duffel.
Duffel. Are you really angry? Or are you just pretending? Because I'm not really an idiot. I actually have some ship time.
On what?
On a shit shoveler, caring for critters.
That's not ship time. That's just work. Proves you can work, but we'll see about you and the ship.
Serkin watched the others watching Brun and wondered. She felt less alone now, less the one being watched. And Brun still gave her a good feeling, as if they might really be friends. Esteban Kutsudis arrived at the ship line in a plain gray jumpsuit with a Sweet Delight arm patch already on it. That didn't surprise Harris. What did surprise her, a little, was that he'd made it here alive, if Lavati was right about how much danger he was in. Surely it would have been easier to take him on the station than on her ship. If not, she didn't want to think about that.
Esteban Kutsudis, sir.
He carried an ordinary kit bag slung over his shoulder and a couple of hand carries. She would have passed him in the concourse without a second thought. Just another traveler, neither rich nor broke, with an intelligent but unremarkable face.
Glad to have you aboard. Mr. Petrus will show you your quarters.
Kutsudis handed over a data cube.
Commander Lavati sent you this. He said I was to assist you in any way you liked.
Harris had her doubts about turning a superb long-scan communications tech loose on her equipment. But at the same time, she lusted for his expertise, She had suspected for years that Kutsudis was the secret of Lavati's success in more than one engagement.
When you've stowed your gear, Mr. Petrus will introduce you to the crew. Then we'll see.
She left a message for Lady Cecilia, who had gone off to talk to her lawyers again. Harris could believe they wanted her out of touch, at least for a while. She had been angry with her own family. She still was, if she thought about it. But it had never occurred to her to sue them. The rich are different, she reminded herself, as she notified traffic control that she would need a place in the outbound stack. Maneuvering in and out of Rockhouse Major had begun to seem routine. Harris found her mind wandering even as she recited the checklist and spoke to the captain of the tug that snared the yacht's bustle. They were leaving behind the problems of the new government, Cecilia's family, Ronnie's romantic problems, and whatever had been chasing Kutsudis. Ahead, the frivolity of horse trials, though she dared not call it frivolity in front of Lady Cecilia. Her ownership of the yacht had begun to sink past surface knowledge. Having to pay the docking fees and the tug fees out of her own account certainly made an impression. True, Lady Cecilia had prepaid the charter fee to the Warren trials, but still, Harris hoped she understood how to calculate what to charge. They had an uneventful system transit, and the jump transition went smoothly as well. Day by day, Sirkin seemed brighter. She and Brun hung around together when they were off shift. Harris hoped this would last, at least through the voyage. She didn't want to have to deal with young passions unrequited, not with her own relationship going through a difficult period. She and Petrus still found it awkward to get together aboard the ship. The intellectual knowledge that their situation was now different could not quite eradicate the habit of years. She had expected Kutsudis to be an unsettling presence, but oddly enough, he turned out to be very incurious about his shipmates. Did he already know, or think he knew, everything? Or did he not care? Harris found it difficult to believe he didn't care. Was he focused only on the mechanical, on ship identities? Unlikely. She knew from rumor that he carried with him an analysis of opposing commanders. Perhaps he was here not to be kept out of someone's eye, but to keep her under someone else's. No, that was paranoia, she hoped. She wished her paranoia button had a half-on setting just in case. Brun scowled over the maintenance manual for ship circuitry.
I wasn't fond of ohms and volts 2 years ago, and they aren't any friendlier now.
Sirkin looked up from her own reading, a year's worth of current issues in navigation on Cube.
You didn't realize you'd have to learn what you were doing?
I didn't on that shit shoveler. Just put the output into the intake with a tool that's been around since humans had domestic animals.
Sirkin prodded Brun with her toe.
Well, this is different. Captain Serrano wants her crew to be cross-trained and above average in skills.
Brun punched up the background reference again.
I know. It's just that electricity has never made sense to me. I keep wanting to know why it does what it does, and all my instructors insisted that I should memorize it and not worry about the theory.
She entered the values she needed for the problem set.
Ugh, and these names! How far back in the Dark Ages was it when they named these things? A volt? Ohm, ampere. Might as well be biff-baff-boff for all the sense it makes.
Sirkin opened her mouth to lecture Brun, then saw that the screen had lit with the colored flashes meant to cheer on the successful student.
We got them all correct.
Brun didn't look up. She was entering her solutions to the next series of problems.
Of course, I'm not stupid. I just don't like this stuff.
Sirkin watched the angle of jaw, the cheekbone, the droop of eyelid as Brun looked down at the reference. She had heard Amelie complain so often about her classwork, but Amelie had had real trouble with it. She had not imagined that someone who could race through the material would still dislike it and say so.
You're good at it. So why don't you like it?
Brun looked up as if startled and gave Sirkin a sober look that quickly turned to a mischievous grin.
I'm good at lots of things I don't like. I was bred to be good at things. That's part of being a registered embryo.
Sirkin remembered clearly the aptitude tests she'd had, year after year, that had aimed her at her present career with more and more precision.
But how do you know what to do? What specialty to pursue?
Brun turned completely around and set down her stylus.
No, I never thought about it. No one expects us to specialize unless we have an overwhelming talent.
That seemed incredible to Sirkin, and her expression must have shown that, for Brunn wrinkled her own nose.
There's generally stuff we all have to know, economics and management and whatever is done by our family interests, you know.
Sirkin didn't know, and she had a vague feeling of irritation. She had never wondered much about the children of the very rich, how they were educated, what they did. But this sounded too flabby, too shapeless to be worth anything.
No. I don't see how you can expect to learn anything useful if you study only generalities.
Oh, we don't. We have a lot of specifics, too. Things we'll need.
Which fork?
Trivial. Children learn that by the time they start school, just from eating at tables with a large range of flatware. No, there's a lot of background information on our own families and the other chairholders. Some of it we pick up, but a lot has to be learned formally. To vote my shares intelligently, for instance, I have to know that certain families will not invest in any phase of pork production on religious grounds.
Shares of what?
Family companies, you know. The things our family invests in, products and processes.
Sirkin shook her head.
Do you know how investment works?
Not exactly.
Not at all, really. Sirkin had started her own savings account in the Navigators Guild. She knew vaguely that they invested in something to keep that private bank going, but she had no idea how or what. The process, when Brunn finally got it across to her, she found appalling. She had thought that money, some real substance, sat in the Navigators Guild vaults. She had thought that some real substance lay behind the ubiquitous credit cubes and credit slips which she used in everyday transactions.
Not anymore. It's all a tissue of lies, really. But it works, and that's all that matters. It's whether people believe the credit cubes are any good that matters, and they define good by the exchange rate.
I'm lost.
Brunn squirmed into the nest of pillows at one end of the bunk and began waving those long arms.
No, you're not. Look, what's the smallest unit of money in the familiars?
A fee.
At least she knew that much. In rural districts on more backward planets, you could still find vending machines that took fees, little disks of metal with designs stamped into them.
And what can you buy with a fee?
It depends. Something that costs 10 fees in one town might cost 15 somewhere else.
Exactly. So, a fee is worth what someone will give you for it. The same with all our monetary units.
But that's not the same as saying they're no good if someone says so.
Brig, think a moment. Suppose we're on a station somewhere. I run a restaurant and you want a meal. You hand me your credit cube. Why should I take that in exchange? I have to believe that with the credits I take off your cube, I can buy the things I want or need. Like the food I'm going to cook to make your meal.
But of course you can.
As long as we all agree on the same lies, yes. But if we don't, if I suspect you'll eat the food but the grocer won't accept the credit for the raw foods...
What else would they want?
It made no sense. Everyone used credit cubes, and only a stupid person would refuse them.
Something of hard value, you know. Barter. Surely you had friends you traded around with, you know. You liked her scarf, and she liked an earring you had, and you just traded.
Well, of course, but that's not like buying it.
It is, really. Look, you might have seen her scarf and said, "What will you take for that?" And it wasn't a close friend, so she wouldn't give it to you, and you'd pay a few fees. And then a week later, she spotted your earring and bought it from you. Only difference is, if you have the things there, you can just trade.
Seems more honest that way.
As long as you know how to judge the value of everything. But it wouldn't work overall. I mean, an employer can't keep a warehouse full of everything an employee might like and let you rummage for a day's worth of goods.
I see that. But I still think money has to be real somehow. Solid. Stored someplace. They talk in the news about depositories as if they had something in them.
They do, but it's mostly to keep counterfeiters from running down the value. I'm sorry. Look, this is sort of my field. For all of the shareholders, I mean, I've explained it very badly. I should have started slower.
Sirkin turned away.
I'm not stupid.
No, of course not. That's not what I meant. Look, if you're determined to be angry, I can't stop you. Lots of people hate the rich. It's understandable. We go bouncing around and having fun. And even when we are working, it doesn't look like what you do.
That's not it.
Are you sure? If not, what is it?
Sirkin was looking down at her hands now, her fingers moving as if on a control board.
It's not that you have more money, that you can buy things. It's that you seem to live in a different universe, larger. You're so smart in everything. You've had all this education in everything. Maybe I know more about navigation. And 10 days ago, I knew more about this electronic system. But you learn so fast. I always thought I was smart. I was smart. I had perfect scores. And you come waltzing in and learn it without trying, it seems like. I feel like you're going to read me, learn me, as fast as you have everything else, and then I'll just be a bit of experience that enriches your life. Oh, yes, I had a woman lover once. She was a nice girl, but rather limited. That's what's bothering me. I don't want to be your adventure with gender orientation.
Oh.
Which is what Mahari says you're doing. She says you're an RE, and REs are all made hetero because your families want you to marry.
Mahari was supposed to be playing a role.
Brun didn't want to be talking about this now, and especially not after Mahari had taken the high ground.
And besides, she's wrong.
About what? Registered embryos in general, or you in particular?
When I was in that cave, I realized that I didn't want to be anyone's designated blonde. So I understand that you don't want to be my fling with sexual experimentation, sort of a bauble on the necklace of my life story. But look, that's not how I've seen it. Sirkin, I admired you. And the way that Captain Serrano talked about you. If it hadn't been for you, they wouldn't have come after us in time. Then we met. And I liked it.
But do you love men or women?
I don't know. I like both. To have as friends, I mean. I never really thought about it. Because it didn't really matter at all. Yeah. Until now.
How can you not think about it? You have to think about it.
I didn't.
Brun had assumed, growing up in her family, knowing she was a registered embryo, that she would eventually marry and have children. Most, if not all of them, also registered embryos. Being an RE determined your destiny. Only the Freelofs could choose. But on Sirkin's face was an angry look that didn't want to hear about complications. She had to try anyway.
You know about genetic engineering.
Of course. What does that have to do with... Oh.
I am a registered embryo, Brig. You knew that before Mahari said it. I told you early on. She's right. At least I thought it meant I wouldn't love women, just because... Well, because it's so expensive.
Sirkin's brow wrinkled.
Expensive? Loving women?
No, being an RE. They're tough enough to produce with well-mapped sets, and we're fourth-generation RE, so all our stuff's on file except any new mutations. Because of that, we're all set to be heteros. So the work that goes into each of us will be available for the next generation.
There's always AI.
Brun realized Sirkin didn't know how registered embryos were made. Most people didn't.
AI is already part of it. Harvesting of ova and sperm, in vitro fertilization, and then splicing.
Then what does it matter what orientation the registered embryos have, if the whole reproductive bit is just handled outside?
Prudence. In the important families...
She hesitated, trying to think of a polite way to say it. There wasn't, so she plunged on to the second level of reasoning she'd been told about years before.
If things go wrong, if something happened to the registered embryo program, the families would still need children. We'd have to provide them the old way. And they'd want us to want to. At least, not to want not to.
So... It's to protect the family against the loss of childbearing capacity if the medical infrastructure fails.
Right. My mother said that even then, the orientation of women wasn't critical. In some cultures, women can be forced to bear children no matter what their wishes. But our culture thought that was unethical. Although it seems odd that they would consider it ethical to determine our orientation so that it wouldn't be overruled later. But formal bioethics always seemed full of loopholes to me anyway.
I still think you have to know what you love, though.
I love lots of things, Brig. I'm that sort. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. That's what got me into the fast crowd at school, really. I wanted to try everything, do everything, be everything. Logically, that's not possible, but it would be such fun.
And fun is what matters?
Not all that matters, no. But look, I'm trying to be honest with you, Briggs, so please try to understand. I don't think it's being rich that did this. I think some people are like me, rich or not, R.E. or not. When we're trying to think about how to get Lady Cecilia out of that horrible place, I'm the one who thought of the hot air balloon. And one reason it worked was that it was so utterly ridiculous, impossible, crazy. I loved that about it, the very outrageousness of it. New things, different things, they draw me. I asked Dad. I thought maybe the RE process had fouled up with me. And he said they'd asked for an extra dollop of some set of multi-named neurochemicals that produce my sort of person. They'd opted for conservative intelligence with the older ones. He said they wanted a little sparkle in me.
I think we are too different. Maybe it's your genes and maybe it's your background, but we aren't enough alike.
Not for a permanent sexual relationship, no. But I don't see why we can't enjoy each other now and be lifetime friends. I admire you. I like you. Doesn't that help?
Yes. I just wish...
You need a long-term lover. I understand that. And if you want Mahari instead of me...
No!
I thought you liked her. She's angry enough at me. I thought the two of you had some kind of...
We don't have any kind of anything. I mean, I like her. As a sort of big sister. But like any big sister, she tries to run my life too much. And she's hard.
That's being ex-military, probably.
I still don't like it. She makes me feel like a fluffy, helpless kitten, and I don't like feeling helpless.
Fluffy?
Well, I have to admit I've enjoyed shopping with you. I was brought up to be practical, of course, but it's kind of fun to dress up.
So, even if you think fun isn't enough, even if you think I'm just a spoiled rich brat with more money than sense... You could have fun sometimes.
With you, you mean? You think I should just relax and enjoy you and forget the future?
Forget it? Never. But right now, you can't go hunting a better partner. I understand that you'll want to when you leave this ship. If you choose, we can be friends. I'd really like that because I like you, and the friendship can last beyond this voyage. Lovers? Again, that's up to you. I don't want to hurt you. Though I might have already. I'd like to help you, if I knew how.
Sirkin looked at her, at the body she now realized had been carefully engineered for health and beauty and even sexuality, at the mind behind the eyes, which had also been engineered for intelligence and whatever the genetic specialists meant by sparkle. She couldn't help admiring Brunn. She suspected that that, too, had been built in, as ineradicable as the choice of height and coloring. In one way, it seemed weak to admire, to love, someone engineered to be admirable and lovable. It gave her the queasy feeling that she was being manipulated by the genetic engineers. Yet Brunn had been the material of their manipulations. She was even less free than Sirkin. She couldn't help being who she was, any more than Sirkin could help being attracted.
I would like to be friends. I don't know if it'll work in the long run, but I do like you. And it's fun having another young woman to talk to, but not more than friends. I could fall for you, Brunn, and if there's no chance for permanence, I don't want to risk it.
Fair enough. Now, if we can go back a bit, I'd like some help with the navigation sets our beloved captain set down for me.
You're going to end up better at navigation than I am.
Not so. I'll pass the test, that's all. Didn't you ever know anyone who could pass tests but flunked real life?
The tension of the past conversation shattered, and Sirkin found herself not quite in control, but content to be so. Harris could not define the concern she felt. Cecilia looked healthy, strong, and sane. She spent several hours a day on her riding simulator, but that was normal for Cecilia. Now she didn't need the massage lounger after each ride. She showed no stiffness or soreness. Her appetite was good, her spirits high. So Harris told herself. What was wrong? Was it her own imagination? Perhaps her own envy of someone with so much privilege getting even more?
It's indecent, in a way, to be so lucky. I try to tell myself it's fair payment for the hell Lorenzo put me through, but that's a lie. I've had such good luck nearly all my life, and for the year I lost, have been given back 40. Not a bad bargain.
Would you go through it again for another 40 years?
No. It's not the same. It couldn't be. I didn't know how long, or that it would end this way.
I'm sorry. That was a tactless question. Of course no one would choose that year. I guess I thought you were making too light of it.
Too light? No, I don't think so. I'm trying not to let it rule the rest of my life. Put it behind me.
Does it bother you that you're not competing?
Of course not. It's been 30 years. It would be ridiculous.
Still?
No. I just want to see it. I might someday think about going back.
Zenebra's orbital station carried an astonishing amount of traffic for an agricultural world. Harris had had to wait 2 days for a docking assignment and had eased the yacht in among many others. On the station itself, she found the kind of expensive shops she remembered from Rockhouse Major. Cecilia had called ahead, purchasing tickets for the senior trials, all venues. Harris saw the prices posted in the orbital station's brochure and winced. She hadn't realized it could cost as much to watch other people ride horses as to own them, or so she assumed. She also hadn't realized that Cecilia expected her to come along, that she had bought 2 sets of tickets. Harris didn't quite groan. On the shuttle ride down to the planet, she heard nothing but horse talk. At least Cecilia's coaching had given her the vocabulary to understand most of what she heard. Stifles and hocks, quarter cracks and navicular, stocking up and cooling down, all made sense now.
What it doesn't make is interesting conversation.
The talk about particular riders and trainers made no sense at all. She didn't know why, for instance, riding with Falkholm was said with such scorn, or another Marlinson seemed to be a compliment. But any notion that Cecilia had no equal in fixation on horses quickly disappeared. The universe, or at least that shuttle, was full of people with equally one-track minds. Zenebra's shuttleport had a huge bronze and stained glass sculpture of a horse taking a fence in its lobby. The ground cars had horse motifs painted on the side. Along the road to the hotel, a grassy strip served as an exercise area for the horses, all sizes, all colors, that pranced along it. The hotel itself, jammed with enthusiasts, buzzed with the same colorful slang. Harris began to feel that she'd fallen into very strange company indeed. These people were far more intense than the fox hunters at Bunny's. Harris had, by this time, seen dozens of cubes of the Warren horse trials, both complete versions of the years Cecilia had competed and extracts of the years since. She recognized the view from the hotel room window, the famous double ditch of Senior Course A and the hedge beyond. Although modeled on the famous traditional venues of Old Earth, the trials had made use of the peculiarities of Zenebra's terrain, climate, and vegetation. One advantage of laying out courses on planets during colonization was the sheer space available. At Warren, the senior division alone had 4 separate permanent courses, which made it possible to rotate them as needed for recovery of the turf or for the weather conditions at the time of the trials. Up close, the Warren trials fields looked more like the hollow cubes than real land with real obstacles. Bright green grass plushy underfoot, bright paint on the viewing stands, the course markers, some of the fences, clumps of green trees, bright blue sky, beds of brilliant pink and yellow flowers. Harris blinked at all the brilliance, reminding herself that Zenebra's sun provided more light than the original Terran sun, and waited for Cecilia to get back from wherever she'd run off to. They had agreed to meet at this refreshment stand for a break, and Cecilia was late. Then Harris saw her, hurrying through the crowds. She looked happy, but with a faint touch of embarrassment.
Harris, you'll never guess.
You're probably right.
I've got a ride.
A ride where?
A ride! Corrie Mannion, who was going to ride Ari Damaroja's young mare, got hurt in a flitter crash last night. A mild concussion, they said, but they won't put him in the regen tanks for at least 48 hours, and by then it will be too late. Ari was telling me all this, and then she asked me... I didn't say a word, Harris, I promise. She asked me if I would consider riding for her. I know I said I didn't mean to compete again, but...
But you want to.
From the cubes alone, and from her brief experience of fox hunting, Harris had had a vague notion that way herself. But one look at the real obstacles had changed her mind.
Of course you do. May I help?
You don't think I'm crazy? An old woman?
Harris did think she was crazy. She thought they were all crazy. But Cecilia was no worse than the others.
You aren't an old woman anymore. You've been working out on the simulator. You've got a lifetime of skills and new strength. And it's your neck.
Come on, then. I'll get you an ID tag so you can come in with me. You have to see this mare.
Harris didn't have to see the mare. She had only to see the look on Cecilia's face. And remember that less than a year ago, Cecilia had been flat in bed, paralyzed and blind. As with the fox hunting, more went on behind the scenes than Harris would have guessed from the entertainment cubes she'd seen. The trial's organization had its own security procedures. Harris and Cecilia both needed ID tags, and Cecilia had to have the complete array of numbers that she would wear during competition. Cecilia spent half an hour at the tailor's getting measurements taken for her competition clothes.
I have all this somewhere, probably in a trunk back on Rotterdam. Maybe even somewhere in the yacht, though we didn't move everything back aboard. I don't remember, really, because it had been so long since I needed it.
Why so many changes of clothes?
Harris had wondered about that even with the fox hunters. Why not simply design comfortable riding clothes that would work and then wear them for all occasions?
Tradition. And I'd like to know what a shad is, so I'd know why this looks anything like its belly.
Cecilia gestured at her image in the mirror. Harris shook her head.
Yet, that's what this kind of jacket is called.
Harris followed her from the tailor's to the saddler's, where Cecilia picked out various straps that looked, to Harris, like all the others.
Reins are just reins, aren't they?
Not when you're coming down a drop in the rain. And by the way, see if somebody can dig my saddles out of storage and put them on next shuttle. I'd rather not break in a new saddle on course.
Harris found a public comm booth.
Cecilia needs someone to find her saddles in storage and bring them down on a shuttle.
I'll do it, if you give me leave to come down.
Fine. And why not bring Sirkin down, too? She's probably never seen anything like this.
Finally, they arrived at one of the long stable rows. Dari Damaroja had four horses in the trials, two in the senior trials, and one each in training and intermediate. Grooms in light blue shirts bustled about, carrying buckets and tack, pushing barrows of straw, bales of hay, sacks of feed. Ari herself, a tall woman with thick, gray-streaked hair, was bent over inspecting a horse's hoof when Cecilia came up with Harris.
Cold soak until the vet comes. Oh, hi, Ceci. Got your rider's registration yet?
Yes. And this is Harris, who's hunted with the greens at Bunny's.
Nothing at all, Harris noted wryly, about her main occupation as a ship's captain.
Ah, then you can ride. Ever event?
No. I came to riding a bit late for that.
It's never too late. Start with something easy, you'll love it.
Not this year. I'm just here to help Cecilia.
So next year. Now, Cecilia, I've had the groom warm her up for you. We've got 2 hours in the dressage complex, ring 15. Get to know her. Feel her out. She may buck a few times. She usually does.
Where can I change?
Might as well use her stall. Your friend, Harris? She can hang on to your other stuff until we clear out Corey's locker.
Cecilia ducked into the stall and reappeared in breeches, boots, and pullover. Harris took the clothes she'd been wearing, rolled them into Cecilia's duffel, and felt uncomfortably like a lady's maid. She followed Cecilia down the long row of stalls and utility areas, past grooms washing horses, walking horses, feeding horses, and mucking out stalls.
The great thing about Werin is there's no shortage of space. You don't have to make do with a few practice rings, a single warm-up ring.
So it appeared. A vast field, broken into a long row of dressage rings separated by 10-meter alleys, and another long row of larger rings with two or three jumps each. Everywhere, horses and riders and trainers. At the far end, Harris saw the number 15. A bright bay mare strode around the outside, ridden by a groom in the light blue shirt of Ari's stable. Cecilia showed her competitor's pass, and the groom hopped down to give her a leg up. Harris stood back. She didn't understand most of what Cecilia was doing that first session. That it would lead to a dressage test the day after next, yes, but not how Cecilia's choice of gait and pattern aimed at that goal. Cecilia's expression gave her no clue, and her comments and questions to the groom and then Ari didn't clear things up. Harris felt uncomfortable, not only because of the hot sun. If anyone had asked her, she thought it was a silly thing to do in the first place, trying to get horses over those obstacles. And for Cecilia, at her age, when she hadn't done it for 30 years, and on a horse she didn't know, it was worse than silly. But no one did ask her, and she kept her opinion to herself. When Brunn and Sirkin arrived with Cecilia's saddle, which looked just like all the other saddles to Harris's eye, she noticed that Sirkin reacted as she did, while Brunn clearly belonged with the equestrian enthused. Before the day was out, Brunn had convinced Ari to let her work with the horses, for no pay, of course. Sirkin, having been stepped on by the first horse she got close to, had even less enthusiasm than Harris. Early in the morning, 2 days later, Harris found herself perched on a hard seat in the viewing stands of the dressage arena. Cecilia, already dressed for her own appearance, sat with her at first to explain the routine. She explained why the judges nitpicked. Harris thought it was silly to worry about one loop of a serpentine being flatter than another. It seemed an archaic concern, like continuing to practice drill formations never used in real military actions. Then Cecilia left to warm up her own mount. Harris worried. She still couldn't reconcile the old Cecilia, well into her 80s, with the vigorous woman who seemed a few years younger than herself. She kept expecting that appearance to crack, as if it were only a shell over the old one. She was thoroughly bored by the time Cecilia appeared. All the horses did exactly the same thing, or tried to. One went into a fit of bucking, which was at least exciting, if disastrous to its score. But most simply went around and around, trot and canter, slower or faster. Cecilia and the bay mare did the same, not as badly as some and not as well as the best. Harris tried to be interested, but she really couldn't tell how the judges scored any of it. The numbers posted afterwards meant nothing to her. She climbed out of the stands after Cecilia's round, sure her backside would have been happier somewhere else.
That's over with. Now for tomorrow.
Tomorrow being the cross-country phase, Harris knew, with 4 sections that tested the horse's endurance, speed, and jumping ability.
That's the fun part.
Harris had more than doubts, but at least she wouldn't have to sit through all of it. She could watch on monitors or walk from one obstacle to another. Harris watched the start on the monitor. Cecilia had the mare gathered up in a coil, ready to explode, and when the starter waved, she sent the mare out at a powerful canter. The first fence, invariably described as inviting, didn't look it to Harris. The egg cases of the native saurids glittered bronze in the sun, and their narrow ends, pointed up, looked too much like missiles on a rack.
We used to use the whole eggs, but someone crashed into them 1 year and the stench was so bad none of the other horses would go near the fence. Ruined the scoring, completely upset everyone. Now they have to wait the bottoms of them, but at least there's no stink.
Cecilia and the mare were safely over the first fence, and Harris decided to walk across the course to the water complex. Cecilia had said it would be a good place to watch. Cecilia grinned into the wind. The mare had calmed down on the steeplechase, where she could run freely, and she met all the fences squarely with the attitude of a horse that knows it can jump. Of course, most horses would jump on the steeplechase course, with its open grassy terrain and its clearly defined fences. The problems would come in the cross-country phase. During roads and tracks, Cecilia tried to feel out how the mare felt about different surfaces, about dark patches of shade and reflections from water. The mare didn't like sudden changes in light, but she would go on if supported by the rider. She paid no heed to the loose dog that suddenly yapped at her heels, a good omen because the crowds in the event course often had dogs, and at least one always got loose. On the big course, Cecilia continued to feel her way into the mare's reflexes. So far, she was amazed at how easy it all seemed. Her own reflexes had come back as if the 30 years since her last big season had never been. They had cleared that first easy fence. The second fence was another straightforward, well-defined obstacle, made of the intertwined trunks of a thicket. The mare flowed over it. Now the course ran toward the ridge for which it was named, the gentle grade up to a scary but jumpable set of rails over a big ditch. The mare looked at the ditch, but jumped without real hesitation when Cecilia sat tight. Next came the Saurus Steps, a staircase arrangement that required the horse to bounce up a series of ledges, then take one stride and jump a drop fence. Here, Cecilia thought the mare was going to run out of impulsion on the last bounce, and legged her hard into the stride at the top. The mare stretched and almost crashed the fence, but caught herself and landed without falling.
My mistake. Too much pushing, too much delight in being here again.
But there was no time to re-ride it in her head. She was already entering the switchbacks that led to the ridgetop, with trappy obstacles at each turn. Two of them required a trot approach. The others could be cantered if the horse didn't pull too badly. The mare pulled like a tractor, fighting the down transitions, snaking her head. On the second trot fence, the mare charged straight ahead past the fence and ran out past the flag.
Settle down.
Cecilia was still pushing too hard, abusing the fragile two-day relationship. The mare switched her tail and backed up, kicking out finally before Cecilia got her lined up for the jump. She jumped willingly once aimed straight at the fence and didn't charge the next fence.
Finesse. It's easier if you don't fight the course.
Or the rider, but it wouldn't help to tell the horse that. She had to convey that with her body. All the mare would understand. Now they were on the ridge, headed back to the east, roughly parallel to the early part of the course, but higher. Here, the obstacles were built to take advantage of natural stone formations. Horses had to jump into depressions, leap back up and over the ridge line, twisting and turning, changing leads and stride length between each obstacle. Cecilia had always enjoyed this demanding part of the course. On a good day, it had a compelling, syncopated rhythm, very satisfying to mind and body. On a bad day, it was a bone-jarring, breath-eating nightmare of near catastrophe. This mare continued her headstrong, stiff-sided refusal to bend left, but Cecilia kept her on course, regaining her own confidence with every successful jump. Perhaps she was out of practice, but she hauled the mare around a stone pillar and got her lined up for the next. She could still handle a difficult horse on a difficult course. She felt more alive than she had in years. She knew the tapes would show a wide grin on her face. The most dangerous part of the course lay downhill to the water complex. From above, it could look all too inviting, a long sweep of green to the tiny red and white decorations at the water's edge, tempting horse and rider alike to set off down the slope at full speed. But on the way down were two punishing obstacles, a drop fence and a large bank with a ditch below. Cecilia had seen many a rider come to grief here. She had done it herself. She took a firm hold of the mare and eased her over the drop fence. Below it, the mare picked up speed. She wanted to charge at the bank, fly off the top. Cecilia wrestled her down to a rough trot, paused briefly at the top, and thought she had the mare ready for the slide and jump below. Suddenly, the mare swung sideways on the steep slope, reared, plunged, and fell. Cecilia flung herself off on the upslope side as the mare went down.
Oh, you idiot.
She meant both of them. This finished the round as far as scores went. Completion was the best she could hope for now, and one more refusal would eliminate them. She knew this debacle would be featured on the annual cube. She could imagine the commentator's remarks about her age. At least she hadn't been wearing a camera herself. The mare lay upside down for a moment, legs thrashing, then heaved herself over and up, clambering out of the muck with more power than grace. She seemed unhurt as Cecilia led her away from the course and checked her legs. Cecilia looked at the saddle, now well-greased with mud, and accepted a leg up into the slippery mess with the resignation of experience. The mare was sound. The best thing to do was keep going and finish the course, if she could. The water complex was next, offering a serious challenge even to riders with dry saddles and steerable horses. Cecilia decided on the straight route, mostly because the mare's mistakes had all been steering problems. With that in mind, she eased the mare around the one sharp turn on the approach and legged her at the first fence. The mare jumped clean, sailing into the water with the enthusiasm of youth and a tremendous splash. She cantered gaily through the stream, leapt out the far side and over the bounce, as if she'd been doing it all her life. On the far side of the water complex, the course made a circuit of a large open area, with obstacles spaced along it, rewarding horses that liked to gallop on. Here, the mare had no problems, attacking one jump after another with undiminished verve. Cecilia put the problems behind her and enjoyed the ride. This was what she loved. This was what she had dreamed of in those months of blind paralysis. The warm, live, powerful body beneath her. The thudding hooves, the wind in her face, the vivid colors. The way her body moved with the horse, pumping her own breath in and out. Even the sharp bite of fear that made the successful jumps individual spurts of relief and delight. At the finish, the mare galloped through the posts with her ears still forward and her legs intact. Cecilia felt that if she'd had mobile ears, hers would have been forward too.
Sorry about the problems, Ari. I think I was too rough with her on the stair steps, and that's why she fought with me later.
She didn't really want to talk about it. Ari seemed to realize that and led the mare away. Cecilia wanted to be alone to savor the feelings, the joy that thrust so deep it hurt. She was back where she belonged. She could still do it. Common sense be damned. She didn't have to give it up yet. Harris, familiar with the cubes of Cecilia's great rides of the past, couldn't help thinking that this had been a disaster. The horse had refused one fence. The horse had fallen upside down in a ditch, and Cecilia was lucky not to have been squashed underneath. Mud from the fall caked Cecilia's breeches.
Not too shabby. The mare and I needed more time together. Whew, what a mess. I've got to get cleaned up. An old friend asked me to dinner.
But tomorrow...
Tomorrow's just the jumping, and she's going to be a pain to truck around that course. We'll probably have a few rails down, but it's worth it. I can't tell you how much fun it's been.
Harris opened her mouth and shut it again. She was reminded that she had once thought fox hunting was stupid and had found it fun herself. Maybe this was fun if you were good enough. She wasn't, and she told herself she never intended to be. The next morning, Harris was back in the stands, this time with a cushion she'd brought. Since competitors rode in reverse order of standings, Cecilia's show jumping round came early. Most of the horses with more faults had not completed the course and would not be jumping. Harris watched the mare shift and stamp as Cecilia checked the girth and mounted. The horse showed no signs of the previous day's efforts. Her bright bay coat gleamed, clean of the mud from the ditch. The jump course required not only jumping ability, but a level of steering that this mare hadn't attained. Harris could see that Cecilia was trying to give the mare the easiest route through the maze, with sweeping turns that set her up at a good distance from the next obstacle. The mare resisted, trying to cut the round corners and charge at any fence that caught her eye. That she went over the fences in the right order seemed a minor miracle. The large one was that she didn't fall or crack Cecilia's head against either of the large trees in the ring. She still had two fences down, one of them in a scatter of rails that made Harris wince. She could almost feel the bruises on her own chins. By the end of the day's performances, Harris understood a bit more about the sport, but she had no intention of risking her own neck that way. People who craved that much danger should be firefighters or some other job that accomplished something worthwhile to balance the danger. Cecilia was flushed and happy, eager to talk now about today's winner, someone she'd known as a junior competitor, and the number of rejuvenants competing. Of the 5 top placings, 3 were rejuvenants.
Does that mean you'll go back to competition, if other rejuvenants are doing it?
I might. I'm not sure. Pater, my friend that I went out with last night, wants to talk to me about rejuvenant politics. I'll listen to him, but I can't think of myself as a person whose interests have changed just because I'm going to live longer.
Perhaps not. But if 3 of the top 5 riders are rejuvenants, where does that leave the youngsters just starting? Experience counts.
Harris was sure Cecilia would compete again. She was far too happy to give it up. She couldn't help wondering what that would mean for her and the Sweet Delight.
And some rejuvenants don't place. I certainly didn't.
Cecilia had recognized the face, but at first had not known whether this was Pater himself, a son, or a grandson. The long, bony, dark-skinned face looked all of 30. Had Pater taken rejuvenation? How many times? He wore a full-sleeved white shirt with lace at the collar over tight gray trousers. He had always, she recalled, favored a romantic image. He had been the first man she knew to wear earrings, though now he wore 3 small platinum ones in place of the great gold pirate hoop of his flamboyant youth. He held her hand a long moment.
My dear Cecilia, you look lovely.
I look 40-ish, and I was never lovely.
You were, but you didn't like to hear it. And yes, I'm Pater himself.
He tilted his head. His rings flashed in his ear.
I notice you aren't wearing any. Are you trying to pass?
Pass?
As your apparent age, I meant. Perhaps you were planning to compete seriously again, and...
I'm not trying to be anything but myself. I never did.
Oh, sorry, I seem to have hit a sore point. It's just that you aren't wearing any earrings.
I don't follow fads in jewelry. I prefer quality.
She glared, but he didn't flinch. Of course, he hadn't flinched much when they were both in their 20s and she'd glared at him. Now he shook his head. She had always liked his chuckle. For some reason, it made her feel safe.
Forgive me, I should not laugh, but it is so like you to be unaware of the code. You're right, Cecilia. You never paid attention to fads, or tried to be anything but what you are. Let me explain. Those of us who've experienced the Ramhoff-Innocent rejuvenation process several times found that we were confusing some of the people we'd always known. Even within the family, we might be taken for our own descendants. We didn't want to wear large signs saying, I am Pater Origimos, the original, or anything like that. We wanted some discreet signal, and this is what we use.
He touched the rings in his left ear.
Earrings?
It seemed a silly choice. Cecilia tried to remember how many earrings she'd seen lately, and whether Lorenza had worn them.
They aren't just earrings. The first serial rejuvenations were all done under special license, with very close monitoring. They wore implanted platinum ceramic discs encoded with all the necessary medical information, from their baseline data to the dosages. Someone, I forgot who, objected to the disc and asked if it could be made more decorative. Next thing you know, rings. Now we use them to indicate how many rejuvenations we've had, which is a clue, though not really precise, to our full age.
But why would you want to? I can see what you mean about families. Although there's no young woman in mine who resembles me that closely. But surely they could learn.
Oh, I suppose so. It's handy in business, though, when associates know that the youngish man with the 3 earrings is the CEO, while the one with the single earring is his son, merely a division vice president.
Ross never sneaks in another earring?
Cecilia remembered Ross very well. She had never liked him.
Not while I'm in the same system. I suppose he could, but then he'd have to sustain conversations with any of my friends, and he couldn't. Which brings up the other issue, perhaps the main one. Haven't you discovered yet how boring the young are?
I have not.
Cecilia was in no mood to agree with Pater about anything. His face twisted into the wry expression she had once found so fascinating.
You will. Having a young body is one thing, and I like it, and I'm sure you do too. No more aches and pains, no more flab and stiffness. Vivid tastes and smells, a digestive tract with renewed ability to cope with all the culinary delights of 100 worlds. You can ride a competitive course again if you want, but will you want to?
I just did.
True, but that was survival euphoria, perhaps, after your ordeal. Will you continue to compete? The physical sensations you enjoyed, Those are strong again, just as I swim in Big Surf, which I always loved. You will always ride, perhaps, but you may not always want to compete. One reason is the constant contact with the young. There's nothing wrong with the young. They will grow up to be old. But you have already solved the problems they find so distressing. Just as when you were originally 40, you found adolescence boring. And don't tell me you didn't, because I remember what you said about Ross when he was in school.
That was Ross. Ross had been boring because all he thought about was Ross. Although, come to think of it, that description fit most of the adolescents she'd known. Certainly Ronnie had been like that.
Take your average 40-year-old.
Cecilia immediately thought of Harris. Harris wasn't average, but she didn't like average anyway.
Your average 40-something is worrying about a personal relationship, and if not rejuved, is having concerns about the first signs of physical aging.
Well, that was true. She could not have missed the tension between Harris and Petrus, and both of them were making a fetish out of using the gym.
More than half the things you know directly, they know only by hearsay, from their education, which includes only what educators think is important. Nothing of the little things that you and I remember effortlessly. Remember the craze for cynopods?
Cecilia hadn't thought about that for years, a fashion so peculiar it had penetrated even her horse-focused mind. She had had a cynopod herself, a red and yellow one.
You see, you and I, the others of our age, with our background, we remember the cynopods. And even if we can't explain the attraction, we remember the ones we had.
I wonder whatever happened to them. Cecilia remembered that she had even named her cynopod, though she couldn't recall the name.
Cecilia, you have a genius for getting off the subject. If you really care about cynopods, look it up. My point is that people in the same generation share experiences, know things that others cannot know directly. Long ago, people who wanted to pretend they weren't aging tried mingling with those younger, hoping the youth would rub off, I suppose. We don't have to do that. We can have the best of youth, the healthy bodies, and the best of age, the experience.
So you wear rings in your ears. Cecilia hated to admit it. She would not admit it aloud. But Pater made sense. She remembered her exasperation with Harris as far back as that insane adventure on the island. To waffle around like that about whether or not she loved Petrus. She herself would not have been so baffled, and she had straightened the younger woman out. Harris had been wrong again about Sirkin, and again her own age and experience told. But Harris wasn't boring. Ronnie, maybe.
A ring like this simply tells us, those who have had multiple rejuvenations, that you have had one, and how many. The commercial version gives about 20 years per treatment, so if you combine the appearance and the number of rings, you can come close to the actual age. Well, you can wear no ring and simply pretend to be 40. Talk to the other 40s, live among them, and become like them.
No. I have no intention of pretending to be younger than I am. That's why I never wanted rejuvenation in the first place.
Then wear the ring. It will save you a lot of trouble.
Restlessness, too much energy. Was it all because she hadn't had the chance to confront Lorenza directly? She had confronted Berenice directly enough, and that hadn't satisfied her. Something bothered her about Pater's advice, about Pater's complacency. She had deliberately refused to think about the implications of rejuvenation. It complicated things. She wanted to go on with her life and not worry about it. But his attitude suggested that this wouldn't work, that others would always be assessing her, looking for correspondence or conflict between her visible age and her real self. Exactly why she hadn't wanted to do it. Better than being blind or having to use optical implants, certainly. She wanted to be healthy, whole, able to do what she wanted to do. But she didn't want to waste her time wondering if she was confusing people or what they thought. And he implied a whole subculture of rejuvenated oldsters, a subculture she hadn't even noticed. And how many serial rejuvenants were there? She began to wonder, began to think of looking for the telltale rings. They weren't always in ears, but once she looked, they were on more people than she had expected. Discreet blue and silver enamel rings on fingers, in ears, in noses, occasionally in jewelry, but most often attached to the body. She began to suspect that where they were worn signaled something else Pater hadn't told her. Certainly, when she saw couples wearing them, They were usually in the same sight. She wondered if anyone outside the rejuvenant subculture had caught on, if some of the rings were faked. She had had no idea so many people had been rejuvenated at all, let alone more than once. Cecilia pulled out her medical file from the Guerny Republic, something she'd stashed in the yacht's safe without another glance. Sure enough, a little blue and silver ring slid out of the packet, and the attached card explained that it contained the medical coding necessary for a rejuvenation technician to correct any imbalance.
Odd. Why not just implant a record strip? That's what they do all the time for people with investigational diseases.
She sat, frowning, rolling the ring from one hand to another. Did she want to identify herself to others as one of the subculture? She wished she knew more about it. She disliked even that much concern. And yet, she couldn't deny that Pater was right about the callowness of the young. Harris went back up to the yacht, where, she hoped, she could have 10 consecutive minutes in which no one mentioned horses or anything connected with them. She found Sirkin making the same complaint to the rest of the crew about Brunn. She herself had had to remind Brunn firmly that she was a crew member, not a rich girl on vacation, and order her back to the ship.
All she talks about is horses. And she knows a lot of other things, but from the minute she unpacked Lady Cecilia's saddle, everything else went out of her mind.
Everything?
Well, you know what I mean.
They all straightened.
Any messages?
Yes, Captain. All disclaimed urgency when we offered to transfer them down to your hotel, but you do have a stack.
I'll get back to work then. I have no idea how long Lady Cecilia will stay. The trials are over, but she's meeting old friends. However, we should be prepared to depart in a day or so. Where is Brunn?
Probably watching the trial cubes. Again.
How's the installation coming?
Harris had finally decided to let Kutsudas install his pet equipment on their own scans, with Oblo to ensure that nothing went wrong.
It's done, Captain.
Kutsudas looked at Oblo, and Oblo looked back. Harris recognized the expression from years in the fleet.
And just what have you gentlemen been up to with it? Looking into the yachts of the rich and famous?
Oh, something like that. But nothing too damaging. They all seem to be down on the planet playing with horses.
In her office, Harris found most of the messages to be routine queries, including some from travel agents who wondered when she would be free for bookings. She hadn't thought of having any client but Lady Cecilia, but if Cecilia stayed here too long, she'd have to find another charter. And that meant hiring service staff as well. She felt her shoulders tensing. She hated the thought of dealing with service staff. She was a commander, not a... whatever you called it. She had gone through the messages in order of time, the usual way. So the one-headed Serrano family request meeting came last. It had arrived 2 days ago, but she saw by the comments that whoever it was had refused several offers to forward the message. She stared at it, breathing carefully, in, out. Which of her many relatives could it be, and why? Only one way to find out. She posted a message to the station address and waited for the response. It came almost at once. Request for meeting, and a suggested location, the dock outside the yacht's access tube.